At the age of 120 years old, Moses died. His final words to the nation of Israel are recorded for us in the book of Deuteronomy. In fact, the book of Deuteronomy is basically Moses' final speech. Moses' last message to the people was a powerful reminder of who God is and how God had delivered him. And Moses' words prepared the people to go into the promised land and to drive out the inhabitants of the land. And he did this by reminding the nation of God's power and of God's commands. If you were to read through the book of Deuteronomy, you would see that it contains lengthy and significant summaries of the commands given at Mount Sinai. Moses reminds the people that they covenanted with God to obey the commands. Before they entered Canaan, Moses stressed upon them the urgent necessity of obedience to God's law. So that in the fourth chapter, Moses says, "Behold, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as the Lord my God commanded you. Keep therefore and do them." And later he said, "Because God alone is God, there is no other God. Thou shalt therefore keep his statutes and his commandments, which I command thee this day." In the next chapter, Moses tells them again, "You shall observe to do therefore as the Lord your God hath commanded you. You shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God hath commanded you." The next chapter, Deuteronomy 6, contains the supreme summation of the law. When he says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thine heart and with all thy soul and with all thine might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart." And then later in Deuteronomy 8, Moses warned them that when they entered the land of Canaan and after they take it and are comfortable and rested and full, he warns them, "Beware that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments." He warns them again in chapter 10 and again in chapter 11 to keep all of the commandments that God had given them. And then he spends the next several chapters, in fact, nearly 20 chapters, repeating many of those commands that God had given to them. And so God gives to Israel, through Moses, significant warnings, exhortations, pleadings, rebukes, and persuasions to obey his commands. We see in Deuteronomy God again promising them great blessing and victory if they will obey God. And God also warns them of suffering and sorrow if they disobey him. And a major part of what is going on in Deuteronomy is this repetition of the commands, exhorting the people to obey them. But there's another part going on. There's a part now of courage, of encouragement to the people. Because 40 years before, the nation had stood at this same point. They had been at the borders of Canaan before. And they had turned away from the promises of God. They had feared the might of the people in the promised land. And so the children of Israel refused to obey God. And so now the children of those rebels 40 years before stood where their parents had stood. And so Moses tells them, "Ye shall not fear them, for the Lord your God, he shall fight for you." He says to them, "If thou shalt say in thine heart, these nations are more than I, how can I dispossess them? Thou shalt not be afraid of them, but shalt well remember what the Lord thy God did. So shall the Lord thy God do unto all the people of whom thou art afraid." He tells them again, "When thou goest against thine enemies and seest horses and chariots and a people more than thou, be not afraid of them, for thy God is with thee, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be, when ye are come nigh unto the battle, that the priest shall speak unto the people." And listen to the priest's words. "Hear, O Israel, let not your hearts faint. Fear not, and do not tremble, neither be ye terrified because of them. For the Lord your God is he that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies, to save you." Then at the very end of Deuteronomy, he says, "Be strong and of good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee." And so we see this juxtaposition of the commands, obey God, and the encouragement to go in the land and with boldness, because God is going with them. And what we see in Deuteronomy, as in all five books of the Pentateuch, is this deposition, this legal witness against Israel. And God is in this, is showing them His own character and His own glory. We saw this as we saw God fighting for Israel against Og, the king of Bashan, against Sihon, the king as well. And we saw Him doing this and providing for the people and the manna and the water. We have seen the glory and the power of God. And so God is showing them that He alone is God. As it says, know there this day, and consider it in thine heart that the Lord, He is God in heaven above and upon the earth beneath. There is none else. He is making it known to Israel and through Israel, God alone is God. There is no pantheon of gods out there. There's not this huge concourse of gods in the heavens. There is a God, and He is the God of the Old Testament, the God of the Bible, the God of Israel. And this is why the first command is, I am the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of Egypt. Thou shalt have no other gods before thee. God alone is God. And He's described as your God, the God of gods, Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty and a terrible. So Moses is calling Israel to remember all that they had seen God do, to remember all that God had commanded them to do. Moses is calling them to consider these things and to consider them carefully. He says, take heed to yourself, keep your soul diligently, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen, unless they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. And then he says, teach them to thy sons and to your sons' sons. So God, Moses there, before he dies, reminds Israel of the power of God that had delivered them and had brought them in safety and victory to the very borders of the promised land. Moses reminds them of how God Him showed Himself to be the only true God, before whom all the gods of the world are seen to be frauds. And Moses reminds Israel of the covenant that God made with them and the covenant that they made with God. He's reminding them that they stood before Mount Sinai, and they themselves promised to obey the law of God. And after Moses has repeated the law and exhorted them to obey, he's encouraged them to obey, he's reminded them of their God, he goes up into a mountain and there he dies. And the reins of leadership are passed from Moses to Joshua. And in Joshua chapter 1, verse 5, God speaks to him, and he encourages him, and he repeats the same promises that were given to Moses and given through Moses. He promises to give them all the land, and he says, there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. And so we see right up front, the very beginning of the book of Joshua is essentially the same ideas as what It's communicated in Deuteronomy as God is going to go with them and give them the land. Be courageous. God is going to do what He has promised. Keep His commands. It's the same theme that begins to run throughout this. So He says later in that same chapter, "Have not I commanded thee?" Verse 9, "Be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest." So Joshua now stands in the place of Moses. He's ready to lead the nation into the land and into victory. And the first obstacle before them was the fortified city of Jericho. So Joshua sends a pair of spies into Jericho to spy out the city, to spy out the land around it. And there in Jericho, these two spies stayed in the home of a harlot named Rahab. The king of Jericho learned of the spies, learned where they were, and he questioned Rahab about them. She lied to him, hid the spies, and she helped the spies then sneak out of the city that night. But before they left, she told them, "I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your terror is upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land, all the inhabitants of the land fail because of you. For we know how the Lord your God dried up the water of the Red Sea for you, and what you did under the two kings of the Amorites. And as soon as we had heard these sayings, our heart did melt. Neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God," listen to her declaration. "For the Lord your God, He is God in heaven and in earth beneath." Incredible statement of faith. And she then requested that the spies would pray to God to spare her life and the life of her family. And these two spies went back to Joshua, told him all that they had seen and done. And the words they told to Joshua were very, very different from that which was said by the 10 of the 12 spies 40 years before. These two spies come back and they say, "Truly, the Lord hath delivered into our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the country do faint because of us." There we see the beginning of the fulfillment of the promises. As God had told Moses, their hearts will melt. They're seeing it firsthand. The hearts of the nation is weak before Israel. But Israel now is still on the east side of the Jordan River. They've not yet crossed into the borders of the Promised Land. They're ready to cross. And so God commanded the priest to carry the Ark of the Covenant into the Jordan River. And the priest obeyed. The rivers parted. The waters of the Jordan River piled upriver. And the Israelites crossed the Jordan like they crossed the Red Sea on dry ground. And Joshua tells us that God did this, that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that you might fear the Lord your God forever. And now, nearly 500 years after God promised to give that land to Abraham and to make his descendants a great nation, the host of Israel now stood inside the borders of the Promised Land. Joshua 5, verse 1 tells us that when the kings of that land heard that Israel had crossed over the Jordan, they were terrified. Their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them anymore. Joshua leads Israel, and they now besiege Jericho. And in Joshua chapter 6, God gives to Joshua, I think, one of the strangest battle plans that's ever been devised. He says, "See, I've given into thine hand Jericho." So he tells him, comes to Joshua and says, "I've given you this city." And then he proceeded to tell Joshua that the way to conquer Jericho was to walk around it. Every day, the priest carrying the ark and the soldiers of Israel were to walk one time around the city. Each day, a group of priests carrying trumpets were to march with them, playing on the trumpets. On the seventh day, they were to walk around the city seven times. And after the seventh time around, the priests were to blow on the trumpets, and the soldiers were to shout. And God would give them the city. I mean, again, strange battle plan. There's very definitely something that God is doing here with this. But God told them he would give them the city, but they were to take nothing from it. They were to take nothing for their own. All of it was accursed. The entirety of Jericho was to be set aside as a kind of offering unto the Lord. And so the Israelites did as God had told them. For 1 week they marched around the city. And on the last trip of the last day, they blew the trumpets and they shouted and the walls fell down. What visible, clear evidence. God is fighting on behalf of Israel. The walls fall down. The soldiers enter the city and they destroy it all except for Rahab and those that were in the house with her. And they brought Rahab out of the city, and after she escaped, they burned it all with fire. And in Joshua 6, verse 27, it says very simply, "So the Lord was with Joshua." And then Joshua sends men against Ai, a very small city near Jericho. The city was so small, they only sent 3,000 men against it. And the men of Ai defeated the battalion of Israelites. They killed 36 men and drove the rest back to the camp of Israel. Joshua tore his clothes. He fell onto his face, weeping over their defeat. God commanded Joshua to get up. He basically says, "Why are you crying? Stop it. Get up." Because Israel had sinned. They had not obeyed the command to take nothing from Jericho. And because they disobeyed, they could not be victorious, even against the weakest of their enemies. God revealed that a man named Achan had taken from Jericho a costly garment and tens of thousands of dollars worth of gold and silver. And so the people of Israel took Achan and they stoned him. Then they burned Achan and his household and all of his belongings because of his sin. And they purified the camp from Achan's sin. And then God came again to Joshua in Joshua 8, verse 1, and he said, "Fear not, neither be thou dismayed. Take all the people of war with thee and rise up. Go up to Ai. See, I have given it all into thine hand." So Joshua went against Ai, and this time they were victorious. Because they had obeyed God, he restored the blessing and the victory to the nation of Israel. And then following their victory at Ai, the people of Gibeon, a great city in the land, came to Israel to make a treaty with them. They tricked Joshua and the elders of Israel into signing a peace treaty with them. And they did so, they were able to trick them because the leaders of Israel did not seek God's direction regarding the Gibeonites. And though the Gibeonites were deceitful, the Israelites honored their treaty that they had made with them. And Gibeon was a great, one of the greatest cities in the land. And when the other kings in the promised land saw that the Gibeonites were now servants to the Israelites, they were afraid. And so a group of some of the greatest kings in the land allied themselves together to attack Gibeon. And Israel then went to the defense of their new allies. And in Joshua chapter 10, before battle, God told Joshua, "Fear them not, for I have delivered them into thine hand. There shall not a man of them stand before thee." And though the armies of the allied kings was a great, powerful army, the Israelites discomfited them. Joshua 10, verse 10. Discomfited, that's a great King James word. It means to overthrow and render powerless. It's very, very vivid there. They discomfited them. But well, sure, that's not right. Look at Joshua 10, verse 10. It says, "And the Lord discomfited them before Israel and slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon." This, again, this is God's doing, fighting on behalf of Israel, so that as these armies fled from before Israel, God sent great hailstones from heaven that killed more men than were slain by all of the army of Israel. And as the Israelites pursued them, Joshua prayed for the sun and the moon to stand still. And so God stopped the motions of the heavens until the Israelites had destroyed their enemies. So verse 14, it says very simply at the end of the verse, "For the Lord fought for Israel." What a marvelous example of understatement. God suspends the universal laws of physics for His people. The earth stops spinning. The moon stops in its orbit. I don't know how far out it went from there. I would speculate it was a near universal effect, but maybe it was only localized to our solar system. Whatever it was, God did this marvelous thing on behalf of His people. He stops the earth so His people will have the victory. Truly, the Lord fought for Israel. And the rest of Joshua chapter 10 is a catalog of their victories. After defeating the allied kings, Israel then went and defeated Libnah. From Libnah they went to Lachish and they conquered it. The king of Gezer came to the aid of Lachish, and Israel destroyed his kingdom. From Lachish they went to Eglon, and they destroyed it. From Eglon they went to Hebron, and they defeated it. And from Hebron they went to Debir, and were victorious again. And Joshua 10:40 says, "So Joshua smote all the country of the hills, and of the south, and of the vale, and of the springs, and all their kings. He left none remaining, but utterly destroyed all that breathed, as the Lord God of Israel commanded." So Joshua goes out, and Israel is going in obedience, fighting, and God gives them victory after victory after victory after victory. And the other kings in the region are getting more and more nervous about all of Israel's successes. So in Joshua chapter 11, we see them gather together into a huge alliance. Over a dozen kings gather together to form a great army against Israel. And in Joshua 11, verse 6, God again speaks to Joshua. And He says, "Be not afraid because of them, for tomorrow about this time will I deliver them up all slain before you." God did exactly as He promised. The Israelites defeated all of that vast army. And then Joshua went to the chief city of that vast conglomerate of kingdoms. He conquered that city, Hazor. And then he went and completed the destruction of his enemies. And he obeyed all the commands of God, so that it tells us he left nothing undone of all that the Lord commanded. And in verse 23 it says, "Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord had said unto Moses. And Joshua gave it for an inheritance unto Israel." In 5 years' time, Joshua led Israel to victory over 31 kings and their kingdoms. In 5 years' time, Israel had basically driven through the promised land and taken hold of this huge chunk in the middle, wiped out pretty much the mightiest of the cities at that time, and had claimed it and made it their own. And though Israel had conquered much of the land, they had not yet conquered it all. And so Joshua begins to assign to each tribe its territory. And he sends them out to settle the land and to wipe out the rest of the enemies. Now it's kind of a cleanup action, as these tribes are now to go and to begin to take possession of their distant, all of their holdings, to drive out the rest of their enemies. And it tells us in Joshua 21, verse 43. And if you'll turn there and look at this verse. "The Lord gave unto Israel all the land which He sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein." And then verse 45, "There failed not aught," there didn't fail anything of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. What a great, glorious statement. A huge part of what's going on in the book of Joshua is God did everything He promised. The people obeyed Him and He fulfilled His promises. He gave the victory. He gave them blessings. And we go to Joshua 23. And we see that as Joshua's life comes toward the end, he calls all Israel to them. And he exhorts them, much like Moses had done before him. In Joshua 23, verse 3, he says, "And ye have seen all that the Lord your God hath done unto all these nations because of you. For the Lord your God is He that hath fought for you." He tells them in verse 6, because of all of this, because of what God has done and what God will do, verse 6, he says, "Be ye therefore courageous to keep and to do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, that ye turn not aside therefrom to the right hand or to the left, because your God keeps His promises and is so powerful. Be courageous to obey His command. Be courageous to not eat shellfish. Be courageous to keep the Sabbath. Be courageous to forsake idols. Be courageous to keep all of His commands." Verse 8, he says, "But cleave unto the Lord your God, as ye have done unto this day." Wrap your arms around Him. Hold on. It says in verse 10, "For the Lord your God, He it is that fighteth for you, as He hath promised you. Take good heed therefore unto yourselves, that ye love the Lord your God." And then in Joshua 23, he calls Israel that day to choose if they would serve God or idols. It's one of those classic verses of the Bible, and he says, "Choose you this day whom you will serve." He calls them, chapter 24, he calls them to choose. And Israel swore that they would serve God. Joshua exhorts them, says, "You can't. You can't." He doesn't let them just get off lightly and say, "Sure, we'll serve God and God alone." He stresses on them, "You cannot serve God. He's holy." And they say, "No, we will serve God." And so in Joshua chapter 24, verse 26, Joshua writes these words in the book of the law of God. So he takes this whole account of Joshua. And he takes this covenant of the people. He writes them down. He takes and puts them there by a great stone and sets it up there under an ark that was by the sanctuary of the Lord. So the tabernacle is set in this spot. Joshua takes these words of this covenant. He sets it down and he tells them, "Behold, this stone shall be a witness unto us. For it hath heard all the words of the Lord which He spake unto us. It shall be therefore a witness unto you, lest ye deny your God." This book was written as a witness to Israel. It is a record of the faithfulness of God. It is a record that God keeps all His promises. He gave them the land just as He had promised. He drove the people before them just as He had promised. He made it clear that it was God doing this. It wasn't the might of the Israelites. When they disobeyed God, they were defeated by the most trivial of the cities. But when they obeyed God, the most ridiculous battle plans succeeded. It was God's might. God was faithful in keeping all of His promises. It is a record of the Israelites' promise to serve and to obey God. And the book of Joshua stands, much like the books of the Pentateuch, as a witness of God's great faithfulness. and as a witness of the necessity of God's people to be faithful to Him. And Joshua is possibly the most positive of all of these books of the early history of Israel. We see how God blesses His people when they obey Him. Aside from Achan and the affair with the Gibeonites, we see really just a nearly unbroken string of successes and blessing. We see in Achan the horrible cost of disobedience, and these things are a witness against the nation. And we see in this, we see in all of these first six books of the Bible, we see this great desire and working of God to have a people that will obey Him. In fact, in Deuteronomy 5, God says, "Oh, that there were such an heart in them that they would fear Me and keep all My commandments always, that it might be well with them and with their children forever." The end of Deuteronomy says, "Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that necessity of obedience, that they would consider their latter end." God was working to bring a people to Himself that would obey Him and serve Him faithfully. God is still working to bring a people to Himself that will obey Him and serve Him faithfully. We are not Israel. We are not under the same kind of compulsion to obey. We must obey. Don't mistake that. We must obey. But our obedience is not for prosperity or physical blessings or special favor with God. We are not under that same compulsion to obey that Israel was. We are not under the bondage of the law, yet we must still obey God. God was working in Israel to produce a people who would serve Him from the heart. And we are the fruit of that working. We are the benefactors of that working. In fact, Paul describes the church as the first fruits. We are those who have been, everyone that is saved has been given a new heart. God is working within us, making us able and desirous to obey His law, to obey His commands. And so as we see these things, let us go out striving to live in full obedience to God. Really, that's one of the things we see in the Old Testament, and it does not change in the New. God is a holy God who expects us to obey Him. We don't get to gloss over obedience because we are saved. Obedience does not have anything to do with getting me to heaven, but I still got to obey. I still have to work out, to flesh out this salvation that is put in me. So we must go out in full obedience to God, not in a fearfulness, but in a hopefulness and a joy because our God is faithful. I mean, we can do as He tells Joshua, go be courageous to obey. We can go out in joy and faithfulness and rejoicing because God alone is God. He is the one that rules all of this. We touched on this briefly in Sunday school as we talked about the Great Commission, because the Great Commission begins with Jesus' statement, "I have been given all authority in heaven and in earth." From that authoritative position of Christ, we now are sent into the world. We are sent out under the full authority of God. And we go out into this world to obey because He is God. He alone is worthy of our obedience. We go out recognizing that He is faithful to keep all of His promises. We go out recognizing that as we obey, He is the one that works in us to give us the ability to obey. And sometimes our obedience really does seem like we're just walking around Jericho. And it is God that is working in us and through us, making us able to obey, able to serve Him in a way that is pleasing to Him. And so let us faithfully obey and serve Him in all things. Let us flesh out this work that God is doing within us.